It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. And the last weekend of Alabama's deer season. Not the end. We got a few days this coming week, but the last weekend of deer season.
I'm sure glad we're going to talk fishing today.
So therefore, we've given up. Yes, we've given up as the mature bucks have gone and found a hole to get in. You know, and it's weird, kind of the rut stories that are out there. As I've heard a variety of different stories, and between the two properties I get to hunt, pretty interesting. They, if you can look at the Alabama charts, they have very distinct. Well, I'd say distinct. I have Mobile County is supposed to peak in the middle of January, right? A little bit after the middle of January, and in Washington County, that's that late February rut. I saw the rut. It wasn't, you know, a couple days it was pretty hot and heavy, but it's kind of faded away in Mobile County. Still a little bit of chasing, but kind of faded away. And it never has, as of this last week, wasn't really getting started in Washington County yet. So it was a strange deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a week ago at our place, the spikes and the nub heads were chasing like
crazy. I'm talking about, we still see that.
This past weekend, we saw a little bit of that. But I'm telling you, I don't know what's going on in my place, Sean, but I don't have any rack bucks to even look at my place.
Well, they're not showing themselves.
Yeah, I don't. Well, not even showing them on cameras or anything else. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
So you know what we do when that happens?
Yeah.
We talk fishing.
We talk fishing
with our buddy.
Absolutely.
Captain Bobby Abrascato, who is a huge fan of deer season, but an even bigger fan of turkey season because it keeps all of us off the water at that time. Hey, Bobby.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you guys talk and pour mouth into deer, and I'm going like, so they're turning to me to brighten it up for fishing in February?
Yeah, this is the month that
we're hard up, Bobby.
All my conversations with Bobby over the years in February, he said, this is a great month to organize your tackle, Sean. But but you go – good. It's Captain Bobby Arriscato, A-Team Fishing Adventures. You keep getting it done in February. I mean, this is not your favorite month, but you keep at it.
Well, you know, and we've said this, I'm sure, before multiple times, is, you know, when have you ever heard anybody go, boy, I can't wait for that February trout. But, you know, I tell you, it's, you know, there's still fish to be caught. They're right where they were, you know, have been all winter. And, you know, being we're only a couple days into February, I guess we can say this February shaping up conditions-wise probably to be a little better than previous February, just because, as you guys well know, you know, from your hunting and fishing that you've been doing for the last couple of months, I mean, gosh, all the way up to New Year's Eve, we were fishing in shorts, and then all of a sudden it got cold, so we're kind of like on the calendar in February for sure, but fishing-wise, it's really not that dead of winter February, because it really, we've only had a month of what I call true cold weather to get the water temperatures down to wintertime levels, and so really, yeah, the first couple weeks of January, it happened so fast. There was really a tough period there where the fish, I think, really just almost got shocked because it dropped so quickly. But now it seems like they've acclimated to it, and they're in, you know, what I'd call a true wintertime pattern, which backs it up, you know, like more like into January. So at least in their mind, maybe, and in my mind, I'm trying to be optimistic, saying it ain't gonna be too bad of a February.
Yeah, it's gonna be January in February. But what is that?
Yeah.
But and this is one of the things that's counterintuitive. If somebody's not a trout fisherman fishing around, or let's say a cold weather, a 12-month a year trout fisherman, that this idea of a consistent cold is better for fishing. I mean, you know, that to somebody who doesn't do this, that kind of sounds like not right. You know, I mean, they're like, why? That makes no sense.
Well, and the key word there is consistent. You know, it's when it's going up and down, to me, is when it makes it the toughest. And that's why when we have these conversations in the spring and then again in the fall, as it makes that transition, those are really, to me, are a little bit trickier times to fish, because including the fish, gets confused, whereas something like this, where the fish are at right now, where they're going to be for at least another month. And, you know, and so, you know, catching them just involves being out there and understanding what's going on with that. You know, and it's another thing, too, is, I mean, you know, we finished up yesterday, And I think the water, I'm doing air quotes here, warmed up to 51 degrees. When we started, it was 48, you know, and that's cold, and the fish are cold with that, but we still caught fish, you know, so they'll still bite, you know. You just, you got to get out there, and, you know, some days are better than others. That's the other thing this time of year. I've read and I've heard and I've learned that, you know, they don't feed every day when their body temperatures are as low as it is right now, you know.
Let's talk about that.
There may be a few fish in the whole school that feed, you know, and they may be just the ones you're catching are the ones that bounce up. But there are days, we had a tournament weekend before last, and, I mean, it's amazing to watch a river turn on and the whole thing turn on, and I hadn't figured out why, but there was a point to where I was probably looking at five boats, and one of the five boats that I could see had a net out, netting a fish all at the same time. Whereas, you know, the morning we'd struggle to catch three fish, you know, and so something happens. I don't know what it is. Sometimes it turns those things on to where you can take a slow day and all of a sudden turn it into a really good day, you know?
Okay. We come back to this for a second because, you know, not to go full biology lesson here, but fish, they're cold-blooded critters.
Sure.
And they're cold-blooded critters, so they are the temperature of the water around them. Obviously, you can imagine what it would do to us to be in that water. It slows down everything. So you have talked about this with them before. The research shows what? Every 48 hours they're eating, or
I've seen things like that, and I've seen you know, once every 3 days, every 36 hours, 72 hours, and
wow.
You know, and so I've seen things like that, and I was reading a really interesting. I wish I'd have had it in front of me before we started today, but it's a really interesting article. Some guys in Texas were talking about to where, you know, certain just a few fish. You know, the whole school doesn't feed at the same time. It was really pretty interesting. It's an interesting thought, and it's the kind of stuff that you and I always tend to nerd out on, you know. But it was a really interesting concept. But that's the gist of it, though, is I think the metabolism being so slow, they don't need to feed it, and they're not willing to feed every day like they do, say, during the spring and the summer.
Meaning, to this point, it's interesting thought. So here's a school fish. They're on the bottom. Bait's coming over from only certain fish are going
to
go.
Let me interrupt you. I want to come back to that on the bottom because I want to talk a little bit about that. That's been really a key factor here the last week or so. Anyway, but go ahead.
Okay, we will. Here comes the bait across there, and only certain fish are going to pick up and eat. Not all of them, so it's like there's three of us. There's fish Mike, there's fish Bobby, there's fish Sean, and here comes the bait across. And Mike may eat today, Sean may eat tomorrow, and Bobby may eat that next one right out of that school. Is that kind of what they're saying?
That's basically that was the gist of that conversation. You know, and what causes, you know, fish Bobby to eat maybe just the position of that lure at that time. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He's not going to expend, which we already know that. They're not going to expend a whole lot, probably because they can't, but they're not going to expend a whole lot of effort chasing down a bait.
Right.
So it's also a function of getting that thing in the right place just at the right time, you know, to make it work too. So you got to kind of factor that in a little bit too.
Okay. Now the bottom. You mentioned the bottom. That's been a key.
Oh, yeah, especially when it's – we were really, really had some cold water temperatures. I mentioned 48. I think one of the days we even started – when we started just before daylight, was 46. And, we ended up – I had a feeling it was going to be the case, but we ended up jigging some – you know, using soft plastics with a lead head on them, which is, you know, a very common wintertime tactic, you know, and fishing some of the deepest areas I could find. And I'm telling you, had to literally, I mean, I'm not good at, you guys are good at feeling the bottom. I'm not. I have to watch. I'm a line watcher, the bass guys call that. I think that's kind of a derogatory term, but that's the only way I can tell that mine's on the bottom. But anyway, if you weren't letting that bait sit on the bottom before you started moving it again, you didn't necessarily have to move it real slow once you started moving, but it had well better be on the bottom. And, Sean, I think I even texted you some pictures of what some of their bellies look like, and they have those little brown, little gray or brown little worms on them. The only way they can get those is literally to lay in the mud on the bottom, you know. So that's another thing, too, that I was preaching to my guys. We had a really good trip. Both the trips I've had over the last couple of days have been really good, but I kept blowing in there. I kept saying, guys, can't tell, you know, I'd catch three and they wouldn't catch one. I'd say, guys, y'all got to slow that thing down, man. That thing has got to sit on the bottom, you know. And but when they got the hang of it, man, they really started catching them, you know. So I just, you know, leaving you with at least one thought on this conversation today, you know, to the listeners is, you know, for the next month, man, pay attention. If you're going to be doing that jigging, is to get that thing, keeping it on the bottom or right at the bottom before you start working it.
Yeah, okay, so when you talk about speed, that speed is actually more about keeping the contact with the bottom versus the fish can't catch it.
Yeah, and the, okay. The other thing, too, is I think it's, as it, you know, some of the things that were happening, too, is the fish, when it, as it dropped to the bottom, the fish were hitting it, but you can't just throw it out there and just let it sit on the bottom. You still had to put some action on it. And I work the lure pretty, I mean, I jerk it pretty hard, you know, and then, but I always let it settle back down and making sure that it was, that it's on the bottom, you know. So, but you can't put it on the bottom and start reeling fast horizontally. You really got to kind of get that jigging motion down and making sure that that thing, before you start your next vertical motion with the rod to put that jig action on it, you've got to make sure it starts on the bottom and finishes on the bottom.
You know, I can remember, Bobby, a couple years ago that you were talking about you had one of the very best days you've ever had on the water, and it was in the middle of the winter, and the water was cold, the weather was cold, and I remember you just killed the fish.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? I mean, you said it was one of the very best days you ever had on the water.
It's still to the best, yeah, still the best day I've ever had was in the day before New Year's Eve, December 30th, and it was cold, and I remember it was a Thursday because we had done the radio report that morning, and when we did the radio report, we had one fish, and when we quit counting at 250. Everybody just said, we were going like this. Somebody's going like, well, I got 87. How many you got? And, I mean, we just finally said, let's just quit. You know, so let's just keep catching them. And everybody kept saying, well, let's catch another one. Well, let's catch another one. We were going to knock off at 1 or 2 o'clock. And remember, we were up in the Delta, and it was pitch black dark when we finally, everybody was going like, one more.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about that. We come back from the break. I want to talk about that because you mentioned the Delta, and, you know, that is – get boom or bust maybe is the right term for that. So we'll talk to Captain Bobby about, you know, what's happening right now in February versus what might be happening in December another time. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Show brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. And we're talking to our buddy, Captain Bobby Averiscato, El Capitan of the A-Team and A-Team Fishing Adventures. I want to do this for a second because I've been so very, very impressed with the social media posts from my friend, Captain Bobby Averiscato. He has come a long way, and you've always had the content, but you're putting it up now. Tell folks how to find out, see what you're doing out there.
Well, we're on Instagram both Instagram and Facebook at A-Team Fishing, all one word, like the old Mr. T show, A-Team Fishing. And so you can get us there. And, of course, the website, all that transfers over by some magical power that my guy that does that for me set up. So you can check it out on all of that stuff and see those posts. And my involvement is getting the content. I would love to tell you.
That's what I knew. I was hoping you wasn't going to lie about that.
You weren't going to let me get away
with
that.
No, I was going to bring it up.
No, but Bobby does get the content. He stops you down when you're fishing. He's like, Sean, here, we're going to get a video of this. We're going to get a picture of that. It's cool stuff. Yeah. And it's like, it's a great thing during the week, you know, when we're dreaming about fishing. Or people who want to book with you, wants to see what you're doing, to kind of go check that stuff out. You're helping a lot of us that work inside and you have a little bit of a smile on our face.
Well, I tell you this, I'm not a big fan. The only New Year's resolution I've ever kept is one I made about 30 years ago, and that was to never make another resolution. But I did make a promise via contract that I would start improving my social media presence this year. So my resolution was kind of forced upon me, and I'm trying to live up to it. And plus, I'm getting a lot of pressure from my wife. She says,
well, there you go. There's the main reason.
So much stuff here, and I never see any of your stuff on. I'm going like, okay, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah. So, well, I'm glad. I'm on Miss Kim's
like
side.
Sean and Mike, I'm sure you are, and Dalton there at the station. And guys, I see these guys, and I go like, how do y'all make that look so easy to do that? It'd take me a half a day, and I'd have it screwed up.
I don't do a good job of that at all. But listen, people want to see what Bobby catches.
Yeah.
They really do. They love seeing it. I love seeing it. I love seeing the videos and the pictures and all. You know, when people can't go and do it, they like to see other people doing it, and especially people that we know. So your wife's 100% right. And not only that,
she's always right.
Not that you need the business, but it definitely helps your business.
It does. It does. And again, you're going to see a lot more of it this year. So I have committed to it. And we'll keep shooting. I love shooting it. You know what I'm saying? I get pretty busy out there. And I wish we had a great grub fishing, which I'm thinking to myself, gosh, I have so few show just stuff that we've done with jig fishing. I don't know why I did. And then I got to thinking, I said, well, crap, all I did was take fish off the other day. So I'm too busy to shoot. I guess that's a good problem to have.
And I'm sure you have the same problem I do. When it's all said and done and over with and trips over with, I say, man, why didn't I? I said I was going to video and take pictures today. And then you get so busy, catching fish or helping people or whatever. And then in the day, you just say, man, I can't believe I did that again.
Mike, you just described
it.
You know what I'm telling
I've done it many, many times. Go out fishing and I have a great trip and just have one or two pictures or something. I can't believe I didn't video some of this anyway. We all need to do better at it, okay?
But Bobby's doing great.
Like seeing it.
Bobby's doing great. So y'all check it out. When we went to the news break, you were talking about that trip right there at the end of December years ago and that magnificent trip, and now we're talking about February. You mentioned the Delta, and that is a kind of breakdown when you leave the Delta, and because Lord knows we've had a lot of years that you didn't even get started in the Delta, but when you leave the Delta and then the dead end rivers, when you're making that transition.
Well, this year, it's kind of up to Mother Nature. In the last 2 years and even years prior to that, is I kind of leave it up to when Mother Nature decides to flood it, and it happens every year. And that's kind of what happened this year. The leading up the week, I don't have my calendar in front of me, so I'll reference it by this. The week before the SEC championship, the first Alabama-Georgia game, up to that week was phenomenal. Up there, and then it just went downhill, and that coincided with when we started to get some runoff. But it was great in certain areas, but it wasn't great to the point where you have those banner times where you catch fish, on the east side of the Delta, running up to say Gravine Island, fish, the whole way up, whether it be the Tensaw, the Blakely, catch fish the whole way, go up to Gravine, catch them, and go down Spanish into the raft, into the Spanish, and catch them the whole way. Wasn't that kind of year, but compared to the way it was for the last two of the last 4 years, it was phenomenal for me on the west side of the Delta, which to me is from the Tensaw over, and had some great trips. But that week there, and I guess that was early December or something like that, that week was really, really special. We had some great trips in the set, leading up to that, late November through December, through November into December up there, but to your question, I leave when it gets flooded, and there's guys that can catch them, well after we start to get upstate runoff. I'm not one of them. I'm kind of one of those kinds that has to get out of there, when it gets hard. So I'm still not there yet, getting good enough to catch them on the tough conditions.
Now, what is it? So, and the reason why, I know a lot of people understand this, but people who just getting into this, why then does Dog or Fowl River or Bon Secours or Fish River, why do they not get shut down?
Well, because you're just getting local runoff, where you're getting, a rain event like we had earlier this week, just where you get a quarter and a half an inch of rain or whatever. That's in and out of there with a couple tide changes, where you get a constant flow of upstate runoff that can last, really all winter, and it just floods it out, whereas those – you basically have dead-ended water, to where you have a layer of salinity that just stays there, and you get the runoff. A couple of those rivers you mentioned, like Dog, for example, drains really well. You can get, a couple inches of rain in 3 days, it's fishable again, and you take a place like, say, a Bala Battery or something, you get 3 or 4 inches of rain in a day or two, and man, it takes. And foul is similar to that in some of the eastern shore rivers are like that. You get a real heavy rain event, and it takes those rivers a few weeks to clear up, you know. And the fish don't leave because the salinity is there, but it's just extremely hard to catch them when you get a real heavy layer of fresh water on the surface in there, you know. And says, well, everybody says, well, let's just go to the deep holes. Well, that's great. It's just, it sounds good on paper, but it doesn't always work that easily, you know.
Right, they can't see. There's no light.
Well, I think that's the big thing. I think you gotta just literally be bouncing it off their heads or whatever to catch them doing that, you know. But that's obviously where they got to go, and you know, in those. But so you know, those places are going to hold up because you're not getting a constant, steady, complete column of fresh water running down through there and just flushing everything complete. Everything salt that can't live in fresh water, you know, all the saltwater organisms, trout, shrimp, crabs, and all the other stuff gets flushed out of there.
So now, why would Dog River flush out quicker than, say, Bala Battery or Fowl River?
Well, I think it's because you get more current movement through there, whereas those, you know, those, and I'm just kind of guessing at this, but just knowing the geography of the two different places, I think you get more of like a tidal effect, you know, in, say, Dog River than you do Fowl. And by that, I mean, you know, if you go in there when you got a, say, a big tide range like we had this past week on that new moon, you know, where you're getting a 2+ foot, you know, change, you can see water movement in a place like Dog River. Whereas even in Fowl, which I fished a couple days this week, you don't even detect water movement. I mean, it's just, there's almost no horizontal water movement there, you know? And so I think that's part of it right there, just because of the way that the rivers drain. I think that's why.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. I would think that, you know, both of them have big inlets and out, you know, where it would flush in and out pretty good. Especially, I would think Fowl River would even be better because you got East Fowl River and West Fowl River, and it can drain both ways.
Well, and now let me tell you this. When you're talking about, I'm talking about East Fowl. West Fowl is more along the lines of a Dog River. You get good, you know, matter of fact, when East really gets shut down from a lot of fresh water, you can go down through that West Fowl system, and it sets up a lot more like a Dog River does. You know what I'm saying? So
You're
talking about two different things, and that's what I do, you know, if I'm fishing that Fowl River system and it gets, you know, you can tell when you get in there if the water's too bad to catch fish. You can go down to start working your way down through West Fowl, down into that marsh area there and get the right salinity because that water doesn't just sit in there.
Yeah, one thing.
And the other thing, too, that you have to figure, too, the other thing that's different between those two, by the way, Mike, one other thing is Bala Battery and say, Bond Secure, Magnolia, and Fowl are all spring-fed. So you got a constant flow of fresh water, whether it rains or not. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
they're lower salinity rivers to begin with, you know, and I think that's some of it, too.
Now, you look, you know, being with you all these years, you often will look, more in the spring, but you're looking for prop wash, too, to look at salinity, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Tell me, I mean, what they need to look for.
Well, you know, what you're doing when I run is if you look at your wake, say you were running up in the Delta right now, for example, when Barry's at 7-8 feet,
yeah,
it's all fresh on the top. If you look at your prop wash, look behind you, and you'll see there's just no foam. You can't even hardly tell except for your wake of your boat, the waves you're making. You can't tell where you've been because it's not leaving any foam on the surface. But if you look behind Mike's boat when we're out there in the Gulf, man, you can see 2 miles of foam.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's the difference right there. So it's just the amount of foam that the boat's, you know, that's in the boat's wake tells me what the level of salinity is.
When we come back for the break,
not real highly scientific.
But no, but I guaranteed it works.
What you don't do, the taste test?
I don't. Some guys do that. I'm not much for that. You know?
Yeah, I want to pick up Mike's taste test when we get back from the break. We continue our conversation with Captain Bobby Abrascato of the A-Team Fishing Adventures. And, we kind of broken down the areas he's looking. And he did talk about jig fishing, but, okay, what's he using? How much weight? You know, what big of a lead head? What colors is he using? We'll see if we can pry that info out of him when we come back. Right. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all along. And how do you, the folks that are with us each week? I got stopped the other day in a restaurant, and somebody's like, just, I wanted to say hi to you and Mike. So thank you. That people that, you know, and you, of course, you hear this show Saturday mornings, but you also catch it tonight and on Sunday as well. And the podcast, which is super popular as well, just go to our podcasting platforms, the app or the website or TuneIn Radio or Sketcher or Stitcher or any of those places out there, and you can get our podcast. Anywhere you subscribe for our podcast, you also get FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And when I see the numbers really go up on the podcast is when we talk to our friend Captain Bobby Averscato of A-Team Fishing. I want to ask this, too, before we get into jigs and kind of narrow down on that. This time of year, which is, it's like you're still catching fish, and we can learn so much this time of year. You run a special this time of year, winter special or Mardi Gras special. Talk about that.
Well, I started doing it last year because of a little bit of what we were just talking about off the air is with the COVID thing came in last year, all my shows that I normally was obligated to do got canceled. And I said, well, you know, there's still some fish to be caught. So we ran a reduced rate trip for 10 weeks last year, and it was incredible. We had some great trips and had a lot of great response to it. And I wasn't worried about the fishing, but I was pleasantly surprised at how many people actually wanted to go fishing when it gets cold like this. My wife, and we've been married for 38 years or something like that, and she's still, when I get up in the morning to this day, we got the little radio going, and it's going like, the air temperature today is this morning is 31 degrees, and she's shaking his head. She goes, I know you're crazy, but I can't believe there's people that actually want to go fishing with you.
Yeah, well, there's a whole bunch of us.
But there are, and that's what I was impressed with, how many people actually wanted to fish when it was
This is one of those windows, man, and I know, you know, you talk about it, like, it's deer season ends, and then, you know, people, I know we're the fair weather fishermen, but deer season ends and people have either they don't turkey hunt or turkey season's not till the end of March anyway. They're like, I want to get back to catching some speckled trout. I want to learn what to do in the wintertime. So you can go have a great trip and kind of, you know, help undo this puzzle that is February fishing.
Yep, it is. And it's, you know, and there's plenty of fish to be caught. I mean, it's, you know, I'd like to say it's not May, and it's not May, no. Which to me is probably our best May, or, you know, November, I would say probably are two of our best months of the year, but it ain't bad. I can tell you this, I've gotten enough in the last, this year and last year compared to the previous 10 or 15 years. I'm thinking to myself, I really kind of enjoy this a little bit more than that heat of the summer fishing in August and September and do just as well. And, you know, so there's plenty of fish to be caught. It's all artificial bait fishing. We don't even mess with live bait. You know, and that's another thing that people have learned that have gone with me. I've had people, you know, several people just in the last month and several times last year go like, you realize it's the first time I've ever left a boat on a boat for a speckled trout trip with no live bait on the boat,
yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
that's
yeah.
another kind of a fun thing to do too, is to do, you know, we're just doing solely artificial bait fishing.
That is the perfect setup. Bobby put it on the tee for me. Because that's what you're doing. You mentioned jig fishing. You mentioned we're finding these fish deeper. We're finding them on the bottom. They're feeding not as much as they do when it's warm, but they are feeding, and you're going after them with jigs. Okay, jigs. Man, there's a whole bunch of jigs. There's a whole bunch of weights. There's, you know, before we even get to the soft plastic you put on the back. So we got to talk about this. What's in the tackle box? What's in Captain Bobby's tackle box? What are you using?
I'll tell you what, let's start a little bit before. Let's talk about setting up the rod and line and stuff. And one of the big
things. That was going to be my question.
Yeah, one of the big things this time of year is, people bring their own rods. I always take a look at it at the dock, or if they ask me before what kind of line. You got to have, I love the castable fluorocarbon, but I would say either castable fluorocarbon or braid. And, you know, years ago, back in my, and probably to a certain extent, Sean's age, and you know, all we had was
for
mono.
Bike.
It worked great.
Yeah.
It worked great. But when you start going to a braid or a fluorocarbon for this type of fishing that we're getting ready to talk about, it makes all the world and the difference.
Okay. Is that big a deal? I mean, you're saying
it's
it before
a big
we.
Deal, yeah.
Okay. Do you? What about that on braid? I mean, I've seen how you rig, but I'm going to ask you the question. I know how I run it. Do you put a leader on? You go braid to a leader?
Yes, absolutely. I put a leader on. Not here in Alabama because we're so shy. We obviously don't have that problem. But that's like my trips yesterday and the day before. And there's several reasons I do it. Probably the number one reason is you're going to get hung up a little bit. And you guys know if you get hung up with braid, straight braid, you know, you tie a good knot, there's a chance you're going to lose a big chunk of your braid if you have to break it off. You either cut it and lose a bunch of braid, or you try and break it off and it breaks somewhere else. So one, it's a breaking point. So I use a lighter leader than my braid. The other thing is it allows me to tie a loop knot. And there's probably a way to tie a loop knot with braid, but it ties really nice with fluorocarbon. So I put about a 2-foot fluorocarbon leader on there. And I don't mind that ended up being about a foot. The main reason it's on there for me, or the main two reasons, are what I just mentioned. So I don't care if it gets a little short. If I was worried about it being line shy, I would go ahead and keep it at 2 or 3 feet. But
okay. Anyway,
so I always put a leader with the braid, and then with the cast of fluorocarbon, I just tie straight to the line because you basically got that right there.
Okay, so now we've worked our way down. And is your rod choice, spine, whatever, different this time of year than it would be in May or November?
It is, but I'm a rod nerd.
Yes, you are.
I got rods for every application, and I, you know, and so usually people say, if they ask me, I say, you know, if you want to start carrying a bunch of different rods for each application, that's, you know, I would do this and this and this for top water, this for jigs, this for popping corks. Most people aren't going to do that or don't want to do that. So I usually tell everybody just a 7-foot medium action rod, or 6'6" maybe, covers just about anything you want to do, and that'll work fine with jig fishing. You know, it's just if you start getting up there a 7'6" or an 8-foot rod and you're jig fishing, you know, you're going to have trouble feeling a bite with a rod that long, you know. That's the kind of rod I would use for a popping cork, because obviously you're not worried about feeling anything with a popping cork, you know. So that's about it. I don't, you know, now, having said all of that, and I'll take 2 days of our time trying to explain every one rod I got for every application. So I do it, but I just usually generally say, you know, go medium action, 6'6", 7 foot, and you're going to be fine.
You don't use those rods that break real easy anymore, do you?
Well, I didn't think I did, but I see that they do happen to some people can break them without even fishing, and we'll leave it at that. You know what I'm saying? So.
Who are you talking about, boy?
all right, so let's. So now we follow that down. We come to the business end of this operation, and that lead head. Weight wise, what do you carry in lead? I mean, is it just how many different ones? I mean, because I know it'll probably be specific to depth, but what are you carrying?
Well, it's not too much like you think. I carry 1/4 and 3/8.
Okay,
for jig fishing, and right. You know, if I'm using if I have some guys on a spinning rod with some fairly light braid, they can get away on any of the depths that I'm going to deal with a 1/4. But sometimes I might put 3/8, sometimes I might put a 1/4. So I don't worry too much about it. But the most important thing is that it's heavy enough to get down there. And so the only two sizes I really carry, you know, and again, without getting into too much detail, I carry some lighter jig heads if we're swimming the baits. But for what we're talking about right now in this application, it's just 1/4 and 3/8. And I don't dwell a whole lot on, you know, guys talking about, well, I'm a redhead. If mine have a redhead, I either take my pliers and beat the paint off of it or let it eventually get eaten off, you know. But I don't really spend a whole lot of time worrying about jig head color. I just assume have the unfinished ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's about it. And, again, you know, when you tie them on there, I would highly recommend learning how to tie a loop knot, because very few jig heads that I've ever seen have any kind of split ring on them. So that little loop knot will really, really add to the action of the lure when you start jigging it.
You know what's great about that, too, in today's world, even – growing up a Boy Scout and all that, you can go to YouTube and learn about any fishing knot out there and pause it and tie it and pause it and tie it. So you too can learn all these knots.
Yep.
You can. And you know, and just a quick tangent on that subject right there. This was a conversation I've had. This is a conversation I have on a very regular basis, is what knot do you – I got 5 knots that I can tie, and I can tie them in the dark, and I can tie them fast. And you guys know I'm blind as a bat. I can tie them real fast when the fish are biting. And so what I tell people is, you know, don't spend, you know, these guys are like, well, can you tie, I can tie 20. I don't need 20 knots. I need a knot that I can tie braid to fluorocarbon. I need a knot I can tie loop. I need a loop knot. I need a line, you know, so I need a knot for each application. I want to be able to tie them fast. So the best knot in the world is a knot that you can tie fast that won't come untied.
Well said.
That's the best knot in the world. You know?
So what would you, if you're going to tie directly to the jig head, directly without a loop knot or anything, so what would you use?
I use a Palomar knot.
That's what I use. That's a 99% knot that I use.
I'm sorry?
That's a 99% knot that I use. I mean, that's about the only knot I use.
Yep, and if you're using braid, if you're tying braid to a lure, or something, you have to use a palomar. You can't use a clinch knot, which is the one where they go through and wrap it a few times. You have to use a palomar knot. And that's the reason I learned a palomar knot umpteen years ago when we first started using braid. And I said, heck, this works great with any other line. So mm-hmm. That's another one that I use.
Yep.
You know, one of my five, you know, is a palomar.
Yep. And, so people that don't know how to tie a palomar.
If you ever start messing around with braid, you have to learn that knot. But, Mike, you'll tell them it's an easy knot to tie.
It's really easy knot. Once you get used to tying it, it's an easy knot. Even when you got – I mean, I'm tying on, you know, a three-foot king rig, you know, and I got to run the line back through the loop. But I don't have any problem with that. I've done it so much, it's just no problem doing it at all. But that is – I mean, that's really about the only knot to tie if you're using braid.
That's the only knot I know of for braid.
Going straight to the hook.
Well, to the hook, yeah.
Right. And I don't we're going to end up getting a knot conversation. We're going to go to break in a second, but I mean
but it is important.
The tying for me running braid to I use fluorocarbon as a leader, not as, you know, a castable fluorocarbon. So I'm always doing I do uni knot fluorocarbon. Bobby
Uni's a good knot, and Albright's a good knot, and then I use one called a surgeon's knot that's a real, real easy knot to tie. And, if you're just tying a length of lead or two, you can't tie it if it's got a lure or a spool on the end, but if you just got a length of lead to tie to the end of your braid, I use a knot called a surgeon's knot that's a super, super, super easy knot to tie. You know, but if you're trying to, again, if you got a spool, a line, or a lure on there, you got to use an Albright or a uni. You know, which are two of the other Albright. So I don't use a uni, but I use an Albright or I use that surgeon's, depending on what I'm doing.
Coming right back, more with Captain Bobby Abrascato, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. By the way, we were talking about during the news break, remember Mobile Boat Show back at March 10th, around that, I think 10th, 11th, 12th, or 9th, 10th, 11th. I don't have the calendar in front of me. That weekend.
Yep.
We'll be there with the Guides Corner, like we've done for so many years. Love being down at the boat show and seeing y'all. Guides Corner even bigger this year. We're going to be even more guides, more things.
And the inside the main arena.
Yeah, inside the main floor. So we'll be in there and make sure to stop by and see all of us there. We always enjoy just talking fishing with folks, talking boats with folks. But at the same time, I've got people like this guy, Captain Bobby Arriscato and Captain Mike Ward, to give you some pro advice firsthand. So it's a great thing.
And looking forward to it. Yeah. Always have fun. And we didn't go last year because of COVID. And
we're back.
I think everybody's going to be excited to be back down there.
Yeah, we're back for sure. Continue our conversation with Captain Bobby Abrascato from the A-Team. And so we've now walked it down into these jigs. Now what everybody's most interested in, what gets people walking down the aisles of stores like McCoy's and all that, is the jig, the soft plastic, and the color of the soft plastic. Preach. Preach, my friend. What are you using?
Well, it's pretty basic. I carry probably every color that you just mentioned that's on the shelves at McCoy's. And you can see some different colors and stuff. You know, and they're not necessary. If you looked at the dash of my boat, you know, I throw the torn up plastics up there. And I've had a bunch of trips. They just accumulate up there. And right now my entire dash is covered with them. And you're going to see either chartreuse or root beer up there. You know, that's what it ends up coming to. Although the other day we were using some white, kind of a white color jig. So, you know, the gist of it is I use either a bright color or a natural color, and just depending on the water clarity. And the fish kind of let you know what they want. So, like, using the Delta, for example, I usually, like, especially we're doing, like, the do-nothing, or even if I have a couple people on the boat, I got a chartreuse on one guy's and a root beer on the others. And you can start noticing the difference. But sometimes it doesn't matter, you know, but,
right.
When they're just eating the rod tips off. But more often than not, it's going to be one of those two colors. So if you really want to just narrow down your tackle box and not have a giant box full of a bunch of different colors, I would do that. And then what I would do, usually what I do is if I make a change, say I'm by myself or just one other person with me, I make a dramatic change. I don't go from a root beer to a smoke, you know, or a white to a chartreuse. It's going to go from like a root beer to a white or a root beer to a chartreuse. And then you'll notice. You'll notice that the fish will pick up on that. So that's the way I go. You can carry, gosh, you know, like you just mentioned, you can walk down an aisle and God, you can see some really you know, bright colors and dark colors and combinations thereof, and chartreuse tails, and red tails, and white tails, and everything else. You know, and it gets confusing, you know. So that's, and I don't have the luxury of having 10 different colors on 10 different rods. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So sure, if somebody gets bit on one color, everybody wants that color. So I got to go run through everybody's rod and change their lure. When just as easily as, you know, one of those two colors I just mentioned to you is going to work. The other thing that I want to touch on real quickly is we're talking about tails. Is, you know, they got different shapes for lures. You either got pretty much what I call a rat tail or a straight tail or maybe a little double straight tail like a sparkle beetle, and then you got a paddle tail. And when you start doing this vertical jigging that we've been doing during the winter, which is typically what we do, I really prefer that straight rat tail versus the paddle tail. The paddle tail will work. When you start getting down in 12, 15, 18, 20 feet of water, it's just a lot easier for, to me, it seems like, to keep that, you know, that straight tail lure in contact with the bottom more so than the paddle tail.
That's a great point, because I mean, if you think about the motion of that paddle tail through the water going horizontally, same thing's going to happen vertically, slowing it down.
Yeah, and you can do it. It just takes a little longer to get down there, you know. And so when you start talking about those real deep applications, which to me is 12 feet and deeper, which I consider real deep, it just seems a lot easier to work those straight tail lures. You know, when you start getting up in 4 and 6 and 8 feet, if you want to swim a bait like that, those will seem to work a little better because they're not shooting straight down to the bottom, you know. So I generally keep, you know, for this time of year, mostly the straight tail type grubs for the deep water jigging that we're going to do for the next 6 weeks or so.
That makes a lot of sense. I had never thought about it. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I mean, because I would have thought color. I wouldn't, you know, I've got both in my box. I got paddle tails, so I got, you know, rat tails like that. And I'm having an epiphany moment. That's great.
That's why we have Bobby on here to teach us something.
I've known you long enough to know that you're easily impressed, and you just proved it again.
Let's and we just got a minute or two left here on the show. The transition out of, like, so we've been talking about fishing February, and that may equal probably maybe early March and all that. But you're looking, you know, you judge things not by a calendar, but by water temperature and what the speckled trout are going to do. So when are you looking at the, what temperature are you watching for consistently where we may get into a early spring pattern? What is that for you?
62 seems to be about the magic number when you start to get up there. You know, we'll get, you know, again, it kind of depends on the year. I got a feeling, you know, the groundhog saw his shadow, so I guess that means we got 6 more weeks of it for whatever that's worth. But I got a feeling, just based on what I've been feeling, that it's going to be on into March before we start seeing 62 degrees. And when I say 62, I'm not talking about like a spike of 62 and then you get we've had snow in April. March and April, we know that. So it can drop right back down. But when it gets up there and gets 62 and above and stays there for a week or so, you're going to start to see some things start changing then. And that's with these fish starting to pull out of these river systems, getting out the mouths of the rivers and possibly even out onto the flats and that sort of thing, and moving out of that deep water deal. That 62 seems to kind of put them in that loving mood, you know, and where they want to get out there and start gathering up on schools on, you know, on the bottom in the saltier waters and start doing their thing, you know. And that seems to be the number. And typically that's mid to late March, you know, and I think it's going to be at least that this year.
Okay.
Can you catch trout right now at Dolphin Island? I mean,
oh yeah,
is that feasible?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that, you know, long time ago, man, everybody, we had, and I always thought that. I said, man, this is a mass migration of these fish away from the lower ends of the bay. But I truly believe now that all of the areas in our whole system have resident populations of fish that don't move. And I think there's groups of fish that, you know, that are constantly on the move. You know, and it's just like talking about, we're talking about dog or fowl, for example. And I get asked all the time, you're catch fish here in the summer? No, I don't fish in here, but you could. I think you could catch fish because I think there are fish that live in those places, you know, to get to and never really ever leave, you know. So, yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I know for a fact that fairly in every one of these tournaments that we've had in the last 2 months, there's been fish caught down there, you know. So, yes,
awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can catch fish down there.
All right, Captain Bobby, tell folks, once again, to book a trip, where do they go?
Just get us at ateamfishing.com. It's got all of our contact information, and you can phone us or send us a little form that you fill out, and we'll get you fixed up.
Perfect.
Thank you, Bobby.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank y'all.
All right. We'll do it again next week. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Remember, catch the show throughout the weekend, like 11 o'clock tonight and 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Also get it in podcast form as well. All right, y'all have a great one.